It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. All right, here we go. We are almost at, well, pretty much the halfway mark of the first month of the new year. It is the 15th day of January 2019. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where we live. That's where you go if you'd like to participate in the Merry Madcap Wacky Zany Real-Time Multimedia Extravaganza. That is The Horn chat room. Jump right in. You'll be greeted by Anatole and Little Thunder and Sailor Chick and Otto to Chat and Oxhead and Squeaky and more to come. Later in the program, you'll be capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master, has nonetheless chosen not to fold space in the rain. You know, when you fold space in the space gets wet, and then you just have to wash the space all over again because wrinkles and everything. You'll also be capably moderated by pinch hit midweek chat room utility moderator Steve, and all around great guy Steve from Georgistan. What's that? I'm looking in the chat room. Okay, I got it. That blood spot on it, huh? Wait a minute. That's a cuff? How can that be a cuff? Sailor Chick says, hey, that blood spot Bob mentioned yesterday was a tiny embroidered 45. The fucker has 45 on his sleeves. Damned if that doesn't look like a Band-Aid. I mean, it doesn't even go all the way across his hand. A cuff goes on. Oh, well, whatever. Interestinger and interestinger with every passing day. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. The first thing we do at the beginning of a program here is to thank the people who go a long way toward keeping this program on the air. Our subscribers knock out about a quarter of the cost of operating this little setup every month. And so thanks go out this evening to Darlene in Connecticut. Thank you very kindly to Robert. Thank you as well to Timothy. Thank you very kindly. Those are our subscribers for this evening. And I'm sorry, I'm caught up in the chat room already. No, that's the whole thing. The picture, his hand's sticking out, and it doesn't look like a sleeve. It's tan, like a Band-Aid is tan, and there's a little spot in the middle of it. we'll sort that out at some point, maybe. Who knows? Thanks very kindly to our subscribers. Thank you again, Robert and Timothy and Darlene in Connecticut. Thank you so very much for all that you do to keep the program on the air. We've got a $400 fundraising goal this evening. We caught up with last week last night, but we didn't catch up with last night. So we've got last night and tonight to deal with. So that's 10 at 40, 40 at 10, 1 at 400. Ha! 2 at 200. Ha! 4 at 100. I'm not making fun. I'm not making light. But, I'm sorry. The limousine liberals seem to be on holiday. But anyway, 4 at 100, 8 at 50, 16 at 25. 32 at 12 and a half. 64 at 6 1/4. And yes, 128 at $3.13. And because we'll round up that half a penny from 12 and a half cents and put it into Agnes's proprietary mud mask fund. Yes. Is Agnes in the... No? No? Okay. So maybe she didn't hear that. Probably just as well. It's Titanic Tuesday. If you'd like to help keep the program on the air, well, run on over to headon.live. That's where the PayPal button is. If you'd like to become a subscriber, there's a little box you tick there. Makes life real easy. And, you know, the more subscribers we have, the less of a cliffhanger every month becomes in trying to keep this 15-year-old effort on the air. Okay, so that's just why it is that... right. Where to begin this evening? There's so much... There's so much stuff, I mean, just in the this day alone. The Barr confirmation hearings consumed most of my day. It was, of course, an exercise in futility, because unless three or four Republican senators find their, well, they can't find what doesn't exist, you know, their morals, their ethics, their patriotism, their love of country, William Barr is going to be confirmed as the Attorney General of the United States, and there was an abundance of information out there today to make it clear that he's not the kind of Attorney General we'd like to have when there's an ongoing investigation of whether the president is an asset of a foreign hostile power. Ah, thank you very kindly, Brother Deacon Asa, loud and clear aboard the Titanic vessel hurtling towards that iceberg lettuce at flank speed. Which one's more brain dead? The wall or Brexit? Inquiring mind, expiring minds want to know. Yes. So that took me in one direction, the Barr hearing. Thank you, John. Thank you very kindly for getting us started. That takes us down to 390. Much obliged, John. Thank you. Hopefully you'll have some company this evening. It would be very helpful if you did, and we'll get the week's bills paid and take care of all those things which are, well, we have to have to keep the program going. But the other piece of sort of breaking news, and we've long suspected it, is the confirmation that Julius Geiser has been quietly and not so quietly telling people, heads of state, foreigners, whatever, that it's not just that he dislikes NATO because it costs us so gosh darn much. Because he's one of those people who's like that. Is it a quote from Abraham Lincoln or Ben Franklin? He's one of those people who knows the cost of everything and the value of nothing. And so one of the things he does not value, because he does not understand the value of it, is NATO. Now, let me preface this by saying that I have not changed. I remain a peacenik. I remain a committed nonviolence person. I do not see warfare as anything glamorous or exciting. And I don't look for opportunities for the United States to get involved in military entanglements in foreign countries. I was opposed to the attack on the defenseless Afghanistan, and I was equally opposed to the attack on the people of Iraq, who had not raised a finger against us, and I remain committed to my opposition to any military action against Iran. So I'm comfortable in that regard. This does not mean, however, that I do not understand the value of a military. I think our military is bloated. It is overfunded. It's a great big hole in the Pentagon we throw money into. We're not smart about our money. The military-industrial complex that Eisenhower warned of in his farewell address, in which he referred to it in an early draft as the military-industrial congressional complex, but they made him take the congressional part out because that would have given all the Republicans in the Congress a great big sad. Well, he was right about it. And he went to great lengths, Eisenhower, for whatever his other failings were, and they were many. His opposition, for instance, to the idea that every American should be able to go to the doctor when they're sick, or, as Flavio pointed out last night, even without a cowbell, that people should be able to go to the doctor when they're well so they can keep from getting sick. Right? All of that. He made plenty of mistakes. He was largely dismissive and uncaring about the civil rights struggle that was aborning during his presidency. There's plenty to knock Eisenhower over, but his comments on the military-industrial congressional complex and his calculation of how many schools we could build with every for what we spend on every bomber, every aircraft carrier, every atomic weapon, every nuclear weapon, were, in fact, spot on. He recognized that militarization is the enemy of decent civil society. But NATO. NATO was born well, that's true. David in South Carolina points out all that military spending did not stop a foreign enemy from taking over the USA. No, it didn't. But let me get to where I'm going here. The idea that Donald Trump is opposed to NATO, you know, just like his master, Putin, is opposed to NATO, is wrongheaded, dare I say stupid, I dare, and utterly ignorant of the process of history, and in particular European history, which is white folks' history, largely, and which you would think would at least marginally interest him. But no, it doesn't, because let's all remember that the Trump, the paternal side of the Trump line is and ever has been a gang of cowards. And so they're not going to be prone to know much of the military history that has surrounded it. No, because they were busy running away from it. And yes, NATO is expensive, and yes, the United States spends a great deal on it. But when you see something like that, isn't it the rational thing to do, the not titanic thing to do, to ask why? Because you can go about as far back as you want, and certainly further back than most Americans know, in the history of that continent. I mean, Europe and Asia are really one continent, but we'll just talk about Europe. And we can talk, for instance, about the invasion of Western Europe by the Romans. We can talk about the forays by the Greeks. The Greeks made the first early contact with the massive Celtic culture that obtained pretty much Germany, France, Belgium, the British Isles, the Iberian Peninsula. I mean, the Basques, for instance, are remnants of the great Celtic majority of Europe of 2,000 years ago. So are the inhabitants of Brittany. So are the Welsh. So are the Irish. And the Scots, to a certain extent, in both cases. And Julius Caesar, at least according to the numbers he puts in his De Bello Gallico, the Gallic Wars, he was pretty genocidal. He claims to have slaughtered millions. Ancient sources usually inflate the numbers for effect, but there's no doubt that the scads of people were killed as a result of his incursion into what was then known as Gaul and the nearer parts of Germania. But that's ancient history. That bores people. So let's talk about the Huns, who marauded across Europe and descended down into the Italian peninsula. You know, Attila. Let's talk about the Goths and the Visigoths, who ranged across Europe to the point that they crossed from the Iberian Peninsula over into Africa and actually set up housekeeping in North Africa. Okay, now we're making a little progress. Let's talk about the Franks. And let's talk about the various and sundry petty kingdoms and states, the Aragonese, and the much coveted Aquitaine, and Burgundy, and Picardy. And we haven't even really gotten out of France and Spain. All the minor petty kingdoms of the papal states in Italy, and the Palatinate in Germany, principalities and duchies and what have you. Moving further east, even to the point of the rise and growth of a people called Rus, who were principally at home in a little place we know now as Moscow, and who became the dominant force in that neck of the woods over other peoples and groups. Well, this dominance was achieved, wherever it was achieved, by force of arms. And it's the fact that all of these little pissant countries were more than willing to go to engage in slaughter against each other that gave us the Europe that eventually winds up about 105 years ago in the beginnings of the Great War. And NATO, despised by individual one, the Russian asset in the White House of the United States. NATO is a direct response of 2,000 years of European predilection for slaughter. In the somewhat modern era, we can look to England. England had a policy, whether it was stated or otherwise, that whoever was the hegemon in Europe, they would oppose. When the hegemon was Spain, they would ally with France to oppose Spain. When the hegemon was Spain, they allied with the Dutch to oppose Spain. When the hegemon became France, well, they allied with everybody else and opposed France. When the hegemon was the Dutch, the British, because the British felt like it would be dangerous to their collective existence for any single power to have absolute control of the European mainland. And it makes for some bloody foreign policy. When the French Revolution arose, the royal houses of Europe went, egads, they're lopping the heads off kings and thinking nobody needs a king, and well, we've got a king, and he. So there was a massive military opposition to Napoleon, which he early on whipped the life out of, but which eventually led to his demise because, well, he was an autocrat and a tyrant in his own right, and he did what they always do and overreached. So, like I said, everything leads up to the Great War. And out of the Great War arose, because it was such a horror, because it had become mechanized. I mean, throughout European history, civilians who were not supposed to be part of warfare, civilians had always taken it on the chin. But the mechanization and the fact that you could make a whole lot of people get dead in an instant, in a single explosion. Thanks, Dr. Nobel. Made it abundantly clear that left to its own devices, Europe would probably exterminate itself. Or at least try awfully hard to do that. And so out of the Great War comes the first American attempt at getting Europe to stop slaughtering itself. The League of Nations. And a Republican named Henry Cabot Lodge of Maine stopped that shit. In a fit of pique because Woodrow Wilson had not kissed his ass in seeking ratification of the League of Nations Treaty in the Senate of the United States. American history is peopled with little villains whom we often forget in terms of the amount of misery and death that they created. Henry Cabot Lodge is one such. Had he not channeled his inner and gotten all patrician and Republican about it, the League of Nations might have had, I mean, the Europe went on and founded the League of Nations. We, the United States, just didn't have much to do with it. Because the Senate would not ratify the treaty. Wilson goes on, racist that he was, let's not forget that. Wilson goes on to have a stroke and his wife hides his disability from the entire government of the United States until the next president is elected. And out of the failure to create the League of Nations arises a little aggrieved Austrian World War I vet who goes on to create a racist pariah state that slaughters millions. At the same time, Stalin is slaughtering his own millions in Russia. And that was the Second World War. Two things come out of the Second World War, and in particular, the Cold War. That's the United Nations and NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. And the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, NATO, which Donald Trump despises, and so does his owner, Vladimir Putin. NATO served as a bulwark during the Cold War of unified resistance to Soviet efforts to destabilize Western European countries and send Europe back to being a potential stew pot of boiling hatreds. It has been a rousing success, NATO. And I know that among the anti-war, peacenik community, whatever, there's a lot of, well, the United States is in too many countries. Well, you know what? We could disband NATO. I give you 30 years before the next world war starts, and it might be the last one. All this started churning through my mind when I started thinking about the things that Donald Trump has done that no president, Republican or Democrat, has ever done. We haven't had a high-ranking government official, I mean truly high-ranking, try to sell out the United States since the early 19th century when General Wilkinson, who was in charge of the entire United States military, sold himself out to the Spanish crown and got away with it because Thomas Jefferson chose to look the other way. Thomas Jefferson, in his high and reedy voice, apparently said, "We must look forward and not back." NATO is the single greatest reason that the Germans and the French and the Belgians and the English, the Spanish and the Italians and the Greeks, the Poles and the Czechs and the Slovaks, and the Slovenians and the Albanians, and the Serbians and the Croats, have not figured out a way to get at each other's throats again in the last 70 years. Because while the United States did not suffer to nearly the degree as, say, the Soviet Union, the French, the British, the Germans, out of the last war, in which the Germans started, we lost enough to pay attention. Anyone who's ever been to an American cemetery in France and seen where the crosses are row on row gets some sense of that. Of course, Donald Trump didn't get a sense of that because he was too much of a chicken shit to go and see such a place of American sacrifice. But when the news broke that he wants to get out of NATO, look, it's been a bit of a parlor game for presidents pissing and moaning about NATO. To one degree or another, every president has always had some sort of a beef with NATO. It was either well, that's true. Little Thunder says, you forked up, Bob. Yugoslavia blew up less than 70 years ago. Yeah, but Laurel, did it do what happened? Did it blow up like it blew up in 1914? No, it did not suck the entirety of Europe into its own little bloodbath. There have been conflicts, but they have not managed to enfold the entirety of the continent. And Yugoslavia blowing up was more a result of the collapse of the Soviet Union than it was anything that NATO did or didn't do. I don't just say things here. But when like I said, it's been a parlor game. Every president has interacted with NATO more or less pleasantly. But now we have a president who wants to shatter it. Because if the United States pulls out, what you're basically looking at is another League of Nations situation, and the League of Nations, Europe standing by itself and looking at itself and sharpening various nations sharpening their swords. Well, without the United States, NATO isn't anything. And it also significantly diminishes the influence of the United States. And so it becomes inescapable to look at Donald Trump's disgust with NATO, which is identical to the disgust that his master, Vladimir Putin, holds for it. And not see that somebody's acting on orders, and it ain't Vlad Putin. We have fucked up plenty in other parts of the world. But NATO has proven to be a pretty damned good experiment insofar as it has kept Europe from descending into another bloodbath, as Europe has been prone to descend into for the last 2,000 years. That's plenty to worry about. The United States will not be a greater country outside NATO. The United States will be a diminished country. Hung like Jesus says, they need to throw that fucker in a wood chipper, that Jesse fucker, I mean, or both. Not quite sure what you mean there, but yeah. And I was thinking about this stuff as I was watching the Barr hearings today. And I saw him try to tap dance around the reasons he was tapped to be Attorney General in the first place. He will be serving at the will and pleasure of an American traitor. I don't say that because I'm politically opposed to Donald Trump. I say that because Donald Trump appears to be a traitor to the United States of America. And Barr gave no indication that he has any interest whatsoever in checking the power of a president who has sold his country to a Russian bidder. At one point, I believe it was Chris Coons of Delaware. Maybe it wasn't. One of the Democratic senators asked him, could the president fire a U.S. attorney who was engaged in an investigation of him? William Barr's answer? Well, he's a political appointee. He serves at the will and pleasure of the president. Okay, could he fire him because he was investigating him? Well, mutter. So somebody from the White House was watching all of that, taking notes. And the presumptive soon-to-be Attorney General of the United States at his confirmation hearing, gave advice to the Trump regime. That advice being, if you want to fire the U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York, who is very likely investigating you, your son, your daughter, and possibly some of your business cronies, what you need to do is fire that there U.S. attorney. But when you fire the U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York, what you do is you say, hey, I didn't fire him because he's investigating me. I fired him because I hate his choice in neckwear. He ties his neckties too short. I wear my necktie down to the bottom of my crotch, and everybody else should too. And so, therefore, it's just a will and pleasure firing. And then, you appoint, say, oh, I don't know, Rudy fucking Giuliani to be the U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York again. Yeah, it might have been Blumenthal Anatole. Yeah, there was a lot of weirdness around the bar hearing today. It was the maiden voyage of the SS Lindsey Graham, chairman of the Judiciary Committee. And there weren't a whole lot of fireworks. I had expected maybe Amy Klobuchar would be a little bit confrontational. She wasn't. Ben Sasse, a new kind of Republican, who is, by the way, just a, well, he's just an empty suit. He's a marketing campaign in search of a presidential campaign, started blathering on. He started blathering on about, and none of these Republicans were really making much of an effort at all to hide what they were doing. Lindsey Graham, in his questioning, well, precious Lindsey jumped. It wasn't 2 minutes into his first round of questions when, lo and behold, there he was, off and gone. Doing his master's bidding, Trump, and asking about Lisa Page and Peter Strzok and Orr. Yeah. Chuck Grassley pointed out the billions of dollars that have been spent on the Mueller investigation, and I thought I had trouble with ciphering. Along the way, in his opening statement, Barr said, if confirmed, I will serve with the same independence I showed in 1991. Well, in 1991, he set about the business of making the entirety of the Iran-Contra investigation go the hell away. And so that's the same independence he showed in 1991. George W. Bush, or George H.W. Bush, wanted the Iran-Contra investigation to go away, so he issued a bunch of pardons, and then William Barr put an end to the investigation so before it could reach its natural conclusion that George H.W. Bush knew every goddamn thing that was going on in Iran-Contra. It, meanwhile, Barr said that, well, he would not fire Mueller if Donald Trump told him to, unless it was for cause. He couldn't fire Mueller because Mueller was investigating the president. But again, and he said that he told Donald Trump that, well, Mueller is a straight shooter. Okay. So why would Trump want him? Well, because Mueller, I mean, because Barr, again, said that it's possible, he can't imagine how, but it's possible Trump would want to fire Mueller for cause. And remember, firing for cause can be... he wore a brown suit. I didn't like his shoes. He wore a bow tie, etc. As long as he doesn't say, I'm firing him because he's investigating me for being a Russian asset. And by the way, William Barr was not nauseated to find out that there is an investigation of whether the President of the United States has sold his country out to a foreign power. How was that nauseating? He asked. And he also told the panel that he believed Mueller should be allowed to finish. Yeah, you'll forgive the way my mind works. It reminded me of the way one might remark upon, say, a pair of rutting curs in the yard. And Granny on the front porch says, well, you might as well let them finish. The damage is done. But there's a great deal of difference between let him finish and let him pursue his investigation unmolested into whatever quarters the investigation leads him. Oh, and by the way, Bill Barr is decidedly of the opinion that you and me, we, the people of the United States, working on day in and day out this more perfect union, we don't get to see the Mueller report. We might get to see, and the Congress might get to see, if Barr decides to let them see it, a summary of the Mueller report. No, there were no real Lindsay conniptions. Brother Deacon Asa says, I didn't get a chance to watch. Did Precious Lindsay reenact the angry warden scene from Cool Hand Luke again, like he did during the Kavanaugh confirmation? No. No, he was trying to be genial. And at one point he said, we're going to take a comfort break. Yes, a comfort break for 10 minutes. So folks could, it's a piss break. But yes, a comfort break. 10-minute comfort break. I need to go and refresh my mint julep and go to the little senator's room, a comfort break. And as far as Barr is concerned, whatever it is that we may or may not get to see, if he allows it, well, it will be subject to whatever he determines constitutes accuracy. The fix, she is in. Because, again, we kind of have to loop back around and note that, well, it'll take three Republicans to keep this guy from being confirmed. And those three Republicans don't exist. It'd probably take four because, of course, the Democratic caucus includes Joe Manchin, whose primary goal in life is to fit his nose so far up Donald Trump's fundament that you can see his smiling face when Trump yawns. Because that's who and what Joe Manchin is. But the funny thing about that, I'll let you see the report if I think you need to see the report. Well, one, that's undemocratic as hell. It's almost, well, dare I say it, authoritarian. But then there's something that happened way, 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 way back. In 1998, we were treated to the entirety of the Starr report. Every zipper-tugging page of it, as Ken Starr and his team of intrepid Republicans went zooming around $70 million worth across the United States, looking, always searching for the keys to unlock the secrets of the cleanness. But Bill Barr says, I'll decide if you need to see anything. And so while a whole lot, and this program has had hand in it too, while a whole lot of airtime has been spent talking about what Mueller may or may not know, there was also time spent today about how the Muellers and the Barrs are dear family friends, and how he can't imagine Mueller doing anything improper. Robert Mueller may not do a damn thing about Donald Trump. And I think we had best steel ourselves to that possibility. Not a certainty, but a possibility. And I know people don't like it when I say this, but I don't care how straight, I don't care how squared away and straight shooter he is, he's still a Republican. And all Republicans always put party first. Every last one of them. That's just been my experience. Ever since the story broke about the fact that that Trump is being investigated for being a foreign asset, and Precious Lindsay did open the hearing by trying to suggest the investigation was somehow tainted by Strzok and Page and Orr, that somehow they were the ones who initiated the investigation, and that there was nothing at all odd about the things that Donald Trump was doing, like giving top secret information to the Russians or telling them to tell Putin that he had gotten rid of Comey and that would make the Russia thing go away. No. The FBI investigation of whether or not Donald Trump is an asset or perhaps useful idiot of a hostile foreign power, that was just pure vindictiveness because Donald Trump would never do anything like that, even though his entire adult life shows that he has done things like that all the time. He made vast amounts of money out of the deals he made selling his tacky-ass condos to Russian mobsters and oligarchs and billionaires, which may be a redundancy. One equals the other equals the other. When one thing is equal to another thing, that thing is equal to the thing. Right. Again, me, cipher and math, not my strong suit. But at least I know the difference between millions and billions, unlike Chuck Grassley. Eventually, it got around to where it was Kamala Harris's turn to talk. And she wanted to know a little bit more about where William Barr stood on the great, big, stupid, ponderously ignorant, meaningless, useless boondoggle, otherwise known as the wall.
In response to a question that Senator Ernst asked, you mentioned that we need barriers across the border to deal with drug trafficking. Are you advocating a wall?
Well, I think I'm advocating a system, a barrier system. In some places, I'd have to find out more about the situation since I last visited the border.
From what you know, or do you believe that a wall would address the concern that you have about drug trafficking?
Well, a wall certainly would, but in some places it may not be necessary to have, you know, what...
Time out, Jack, okay? Time out. A wall certainly would address the questions he has about drug trafficking. One wonders how.
Most people imagine as a wall.
Are you aware that most of the drugs coming into the United States, in particular through Mexico, are entering through ports of entry?
Yes, but they also come elsewhere, and so do illegal immigrants cross the border. And
Bill, you nasty old Republican racist, you. People coming across the border are not de facto illegal immigrants if they are seeking asylum, but that seems to be forever lost on these godforsaken Republicans.
But basically, in particular on the subject of drug trafficking, are you aware that most of the drugs that are trafficked into the United States enter through points of entry?
Yes.
Have you recently or ever visited a point of entry, a port of entry
not
in the United States?
Not recently.
When
I
was
used
the last
to spend
time?
A lot of time, well, when I was Attorney General.
So a couple decades ago?
Almost 30 years.
Okay. I'd urge you to visit again if and when you are confirmed. I think you'll see that a lot has changed over the years. Given status quo on marijuana and the fact that 10 states, including the District of Columbia, have legalized marijuana, and given that the status quo is what it is, and as you rightly described, we have federal laws and then there are various states that have different laws. If confirmed, are you intending to use the limited federal resources at your disposal to enforce federal marijuana laws in the states that have legalized marijuana?
No, I thought I answered that by saying that you know, to the extent people are complying with the state laws, you know, in distribution and production and so forth. We're not going to go after that.
Okay.
But I do feel we can't stay in the current situation because, I mean, if you can imagine any kind of situation, can an existing administration and an attorney general start cutting deals with states to say, well, we're not going to apply the federal law, you know, some gun law or some other thing, and say, we're not going to apply it in your state.
I appreciate your point, but specifically, and I appreciate you answering the question, you do not intend to use the limited federal resources at your...
Right. And it was an important question to ask. But by far, the more important portion of that clip is the business about his support for a wall. So there we've got another little box to check off why Donald Trump would want him to be his attorney general. Because Donald Trump wants that stupid fucking wall. That stupid fucking man wants that stupid fucking wall. Oh, by the way, just along the way, this may make me seem kind of not family friendly. So I guess I'll have to beg forgiveness in advance. But I've decided I'm not a fan of bringing the entirety of your extended family with you to your confirmation hearings. Because the first thing that William Barr did was introduce his wife. Now, you see, my wife's here, so we're not going to get nasty, are we? You're not going to ask me any hard questions, are you? I mean, I got confirmed 100-0 30 years ago, so... We'll just make this a cake, because I wouldn't want my wife to cry. And then there's my daughter, and she went to Notre Dame, and she was a lawyer with the Justice Department. And there's my other daughter, and she's been a lawyer in the Justice Department. And down here's my grandson, and someday he'll work for the Justice Department. Jesus Christ, it was nepotism on parade. Oh, wait, you're Bill Barr's daughter? He used to be the Attorney General. Come on in. Have yourself a $170,000 a year job. What the hell? Who gives a shit? But then all the senators had to say something nice about Bill Barr's family. And they're there specifically to insulate the witness against any inclination to make him answer any tough questions. So what do you say we leave the kids to home? Because that feels like stacking the deck. And this goes all the way back to when Samuel Alito's wife, who was wearing the upholstery of a 1957 Edsel, when she got the sads and the sniffles because people were asking him about, say, his propensity for allowing the police to strip search little girls, you know, little 9-year-old girls. And then, of course, there was the agony of Mrs. Kavanaugh. Jesus. The amount of mischief that William Barr will be able to do is going to be significant. And by the way, as far as the wall is concerned, you can make a compelling argument that it's already been built by virtue of Trump's shutdown. You remember the shutdown. the one that he said he'd take the blame for, but now constantly shrieks about being somehow the fault of the Democrats when he called for it on nothing on no less than 20 some odd occasions. Yeah. Well, it's having an effect on the immigration system. Remember when he was in New Orleans yesterday and he said, I don't think they're very smart people because they, you know, 2% show up for their hearings. How smart are they? Well, no, it's the number is much higher than that and has been up north of 90% before. As I mentioned, they disassembled that program, they being the Trump regime. Well, just in the last 4 weeks alone, 42,000, actually more than 42,000, court hearings in immigration cases have been canceled. 42,000. That's great for Donald Trump. Shutting down the system whereby one determines whether or not an asylum claim is valid. Well, it inures to his benefit because he can say, well, the courts didn't hold that they were valid, so they're not really asylum seekers. They're just coming here to sponge off of us. Because he said that, too. Sponging. Now, with 42,000 court cases having been canceled, the federal judiciary is saying that it will take years, just to reschedule the hearings. In a system where asylum cases are already operating on an 800,000 case backlog. The Transactional Records Access Clearinghouse at Syracuse University says that if the shutdown continues through the end of this month, and there is no reason to think that it won't, that the number of cases that have to be rescheduled will rise higher than 100,000. Today is day 25, the longest shutdown in American history. The very idea of a shutdown, the framers thought they were setting up, they tried to make it as foolproof as they could, but they couldn't make it this foolproof because they assumed that nobody ever wanted a country, nobody would ever want this country to look like it was fucking broke. Paraphrasing Jason Isbell, don't ever say your country's broke. How wrong they were. They did not anticipate Republicans. They had the word. They applied it to Thomas Jefferson's faction. But that was not the Republicans that we know now. It's maddening. But if you operate on the theory that justice delayed is justice denied, then this is as effective a wall as any brick and mortar structure or concrete or big beautiful steel he could build. bright spots in all of this? Yes. Our buddy, I'm sorry, just 1 second. Our buddy Kitty in Boston has a brand new congressperson, and she's excited about her. Her name is Ayanna Pressley, and she's taking her responsibility as a representative of the people quite seriously. And one of the things we've talked about is that while the furloughed workers will, at least in theory, if the president consents, get their back pay, that contractors, on the other hand, will not. Because when you're doing contract work, if you're not working, you're not getting paid. You have to be able to invoice the work in order to get paid. But Representative Ayanna Pressley has identified something on the order of 2,000 low-wage workers. These are people who do work in food service. These are people who do maintenance and custodial and housekeeping work. Well, we can't, long ago, because Republicans, we decided that those folks, the woman who cleans the offices at night, the guy who pushes the broom across the shop floor in a government facility, well, they don't need to be civil servants. They don't need the protection of civil service. So instead, we contract the cleaning of federal structures out to third parties, and they in turn hire people at shitty wages with little or nothing in the way of benefits. Because Merca, the greatest country in the history of the world on earth, now, today, in the universe, forever under God. Well, Representative Pressley is having none of that. She introduced legislation she wants legislation that states that any final funding agreement includes retroactive compensation for the thousands of low-wage government contract service workers that have had their lives put on hold as a result of President Trump's obsession to fund a xenophobic hate wall. Ooh, I like her. She wrote a letter to congressional leadership of both parties in which she said, many of these employees work diligently day in and day out, oftentimes on an hourly basis and at low wages, to keep our government buildings across the country safe and clean. Regardless of the critical nature of their work, these men and women are forced to live paycheck to paycheck and have been disproportionately impacted by this reckless shutdown. And she has, in fact, introduced a piece of legislation. She introduced it today. And it will, if passed, make sure that these people are not left out in the cold. Eleanor Holmes Norton of D.C. co-sponsored the legislation. 10 other Democrats got on board, too. And once again, this is one of those moments where I point to, I'm proud to tell you about this legislation. But because I am a realist, I also have to tell you that chinless Mitch McConnell could not care less about some woman who's paid, 70% for whatever a man makes, because you know that's a fact that runs the entire economic gamut. But some poorly paid woman working in food service or security or custodial work, she doesn't have any money to give Chinless Mitch McConnell. She can't give him any influence. She can't make him more powerful. So fuck her, says Chinless Mitch McConnell and all the other thousands of similarly situated men and women in this country. That bill will not go through the Senate of the United States. It will stop with Chinless Mitch McConnell. Who is every bit as evil, if not more so, than Donald Trump? If we're gonna use words like evil, and yes, he is a wicked, wicked man. And so this is an object lesson in Eyes on the Prize. Representative Presley's well-intentioned, humane, merciful bill may very well pass the House of Representatives. It will die in the Senate in this Congress, but you do not quit because of that. That is a clarion call and a reminder of how much work remains to be done. There are 20 members of the Senate who are Republicans who are up for re-election in 2020. You are probably sick to death of hearing me say this, but we must remember, and the campaigns against them must begin now. The campaigning against Mitch McConnell, against John Cornhole, and for the seat that will be vacated in Kansas by Pat Roberts' retirement. The seats in Mississippi and Louisiana and Georgia and Tennessee, where Lamar Alexander's calling it quits and hanging up his plaid shirt. Anything you want to see happen in the United States that is socially good for the United States, that is culturally good for the United States, that is economically good for the United States, that is good for the security of the United States, is simply going to have to wait until at least January 2021. And if you want it to happen then start right now. Bob, quit telling us how to get to 2021. Yeah, I know. I just figured I'd save you the trouble of sending the email. Start right now. Start yesterday working on it. Talk to your friends. Talk to your neighbors. Even do it in places like where I live. Shelley Moore Capito may not even run for re-election. She may be keeping the seat warm for her boy because nepotism. Because dynasties. Woo, Clinton dynasty! Clinton dynasty! Woo, Bruga Bruga! How about the Capito dynasty?
Huh? Neoliberal establishment shill.
That work begins now. And I'll bet you Representative Presley would tell you the same thing. People like Representative Presley and Representative Ocasio-Cortez and Representative Tlaib and Representative Omar and Representative Davids, all these brilliant new arrivals in the House of Representatives, they know what they're facing. And they know what they want to get done. But they also know they cannot get it done if we
do not get it done. And by get it done, I mean take the Senate of the United States, hold the House, and try. And it's going to be a hell of a lot of heavy lifting to fix the damage that has been done in the last, well, since January 2017, and arguably since the interference in the election of 2016. That's where we stand. So let's take a break. It's 15 past the hour. Oh, time check. I did one. Sorry. Can't help it. Bad habit. I'm getting better at it, though. But we're well past the first hour of the filibobster, and we'll take a break. And thank you again to John for getting us started on fundraising this evening. We got $390 to go to get out of the deficit so that we're just moving along day to day to day. It would be great if at the very least we could raise $190 and take care of yesterday. But I also, I recognize how difficult times are. And with the shutdown on, it gags me to be talking about fundraising. But it's the only way we can keep this program going. So I apologize. But at least we got Brad and Desi back, and so we can go to the Green News Report. And that makes me happy.
It's Tuesday, January 15, 2019.
More than 800 flights were canceled over the weekend, thousands more delayed due to whiteout conditions.
Intense winter storms wreak havoc from coast to coast.
Overall, there's no cutoff point when it starts being an emergency. It's a matter of increasing levels of risk over time.
Trump's government shutdown now threatening public health and safety.
The world's oceans are taking in much more heat than we ever thought before.
2018 was the hottest year on record for the world's oceans, putting the world in hot water. Plus,
now PG&E is on the hook for $30 billion worth of potential liabilities.
California's largest electric utility to file for bankruptcy in the wake of catastrophic wildfires.
All of those liabilities and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
I mean, Ocasio-Cortez, the Green New Deal. You know what the estimated cost of this is?
Your billionaire fossil fuel sponsors go broke and the world becomes a better, cleaner place where humans don't face extinction? Sounds like it's well worth the price to me, Sean Hannity. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, I think pretty much everyone in the country got a taste of terrible winter weather over the past few days.
Yeah, it was quite a wallop. Intense winter weather wreaked havoc across the nation over the weekend, sparking a state of emergency in North Carolina and one in Virginia due to record snowfall from a major winter storm that stretched more than 1,400 miles from Colorado all the way to the East Coast, and it killed at least 10 people as of airtime. In California, severe rainstorms have prompted officials to warn residents of burn areas recently ravaged by record wildfires to be on alert for flash floods that might trigger landslides. Speaking of those record wildfires in California, the state's largest private utility company, Pacific Gas and Electric, on Monday announced that it is seeking bankruptcy protection because it's facing up to $30 billion in potential liability claims from 2 years of catastrophic wildfires. And the company noted that that number does not include potential punitive damages, fines, penalties, or future claims. The state's fire agency, Cal Fire, previously determined that PG&E's failed failure to maintain its equipment sparked 17 fires in 2017 in Northern California's wine country. The company's equipment is also suspected to be the cause of some of the record 2018 wildfires, including the worst wildfire in state history, the Camp Fire in Northern California that killed at least 86 people and destroyed nearly 20,000 buildings. The utility could also potentially face criminal prosecution if failure to maintain its equipment is found to have caused those fires.
Well, if I caused a fire that ended up killing hundreds of people, I suspect I would go to jail. So maybe PG&E does need to pay a price.
Meanwhile, public health experts are warning that President Trump's high-stakes shutdown of the federal government over funding for his border wall, now the longest-running government shutdown in U.S. history, is becoming a danger to public health.
Becoming?
Not only has the Food and Drug Administration suspended food safety inspections, but the Environmental Protection Agency pollution inspectors are also furloughed. No one is checking chemical factories, power plants, oil refineries, water treatment plants, or thousands of other industrial sites for pollution or safety violations.
I would say for the Trump administration, that's a feature, not a bug.
It could be. Cleanup work at Superfund sites is suspended. Forecasters are working without pay at the National Weather Service, meaning weather models are not being maintained, launched, or improved amid extreme winter weather. But don't worry, the Bureau of Land Management is still on the job. It's at work right now on behalf of the oil industry, holding public meetings in Alaska to push forward plans for controversial new oil and gas leases in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge.
Even during the federal shutdown?
Yes.
Nice.
In the Gulf of Maine, state regulators have closed the winter commercial shrimp season for the next 3 years due to warming ocean temperatures that have severely depleted shrimp populations. That's because the Earth's oceans were the hottest ever recorded in 2018, thanks to man-made global warming.
Thanks, man-made global warming.
The 2018 record surpasses the record set in 2017, which in turn surpassed the ocean heat record set in 2016. Researchers publishing in the journal Science also report that the oceans are warming up as much as 40 to 50% faster than previous estimates just 5 years ago. And they say the rate of ocean warming itself is accelerating. If society continues to emit greenhouse gas at its current rate, they warn, thermal expansion of the oceans will add an additional foot of sea level rise by 2100 on top of that already expected from Greenland and Antarctica. They say ocean warming has contributed to increases in extreme weather, rising sea levels, the destruction of coral reefs, and declining ocean oxygen levels, with disturbing implications for the ocean food supply and life on Earth.
You're nothing but fun, Desi Doyen. For
yep.
much more on all of those stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
It's a rising, rising tide. Oh, no, no, no. It's a rising, rising tide.
All right, then. Let's run over to the stress line and see who's on the phone this evening. Wrong button. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. How you doing, man?
Hey, Reggie. What's happening?
This is Reggie from Decatur, Georgia.
Yep.
Do you think the government shutdown will last forever or over a year or forever? Or am I just imagining things that far-fetching too much?
Well, forever is a long time. I think... The report I read said that the Milky Way galaxy will collide with some nebula in about 2 billion years. So if it's still going by then, I think that'll put paid to it. But no, that's a little bit of a facetious answer. I'm sorry, but I expect it. Look, the 72-year-old orange man baby is in the midst of a temper tantrum. I suspect it's going to go until he strokes out. Wait a minute. Hold on. You got disconnected from the Bluetooth. I don't know why. We'll get you back in a minute. Hold on. Don't go anywhere, Reggie. Damn, this is unreliable. There we go. You're back now. You're back now, Reggie.
Okay, man. Well, I was saying, you think this government shutdown will last over a year or not?
It's a question of how much. It's a question of the degree to which Donald Trump's mania is modified or mollified by his recognition of his sinking poll numbers. Because, see, there's that polling data that shows 36% of America supports the shutdown. Of course, that's the same number as his maggot base.
Right. But nobody's getting paid, and the Democrats can't really do anything. I mean, it's like they're powerless to stop them, you know?
They could capitulate. They could give him $5.8 billion for his wall, and then come 2 weeks before September 30th, he could hold him hostage for another $5.8 billion, because we have to take into account the actual cost of this damn boondoggle, and that's north of $30 billion just to build it, and then there's the annual maintenance, which is that kind of money all over again.
Yeah, but we're going broke, you know. Over this government shutdown.
Right.
We're going broke, and the money don't last forever. Nothing lasts forever, especially material possessions and things like that, especially such as money. And people are going dead broke, so they can't get paid. They got families, you know, mouths to feed, bills to pay, you know, and a living to make in the earth. Right?
Right.
They can't just pass it. They can't feel the effects like the bass is doing nothing. You know, being inactive and all that.
Well, and those are the questions we don't have an answer for. Because, you know, he's out there telling his lies, that the truth is not in him. So, he's lying and saying, all these furloughed government workers keep saying, hey, stick to your guns. Don't give in. We want the wall. It doesn't matter if we're not getting paid. This is madness. If he really believes it, then he is deeply psychologically sick. Not ill, sick, okay? Because it means that he cannot tell the difference between reality and fantasy.
Right.
On the other hand, if he's just lying, and we know he's lying, then at some point in time, let me back up for a minute. People have called on a number of occasions, and we've talked, and said, hey, Bob, when's the revolution going to come?
Yeah.
And my answer has always been, there will be no revolution as long as the cable stays on.
Right. And,
you got 800,000 plus people for whom the cable may very well be close to going off.
Right. They can't afford it if they can't pay for it. And I didn't know that you had presidents Ann Coulter and Rush Limbaugh. I thought we only had one president of the United States of America, not three. That would be like if former President Barack Obama took advice from you, you know. You know what I mean? From every other liberal progressive radio talk shows on this planet. That's not what presidents are supposed to do or take their advice from. Because, you know, you guys are both two different fields of expertise. I didn't know they were running the country along with them or instead of them.
You know what? Rush Limbaugh's been running this country a hell of a lot longer than most people imagine.
I didn't know that, Bob.
Yeah, I hate to give the oxymoron credit. But there's a reason that he makes north of $50 million a year. It's because he can keep the mouth walkers and the knuckle breathers in line and make life miserable for anybody who doesn't do his bidding.
Right, and I bet you the multi-billionaires are getting paid, you know, such as Trump and others are getting paid. They're still getting their checks. Am I correct?
Absolutely.
Am I wrong with that?
Absolutely. Now, he says, I'm not taking his salary because I'm so rich.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe it for a minute. I want to see the donation records.
Right. And his taxes. What about his taxes?
Well, I mean, that goes without saying. And at least the House has introduced a piece of legislation, their H.R. 1, that includes a requirement that all presidential candidates release 10 years of tax returns.
Right. And I'm sure that JFK back in the 60s, all the way up on down to now, have shown their taxes, right? Their tax return, their tax form to the American people. Am I correct?
That's not entirely correct. It's certainly not a matter of law, and it's only become a matter of tradition in the course of the last generation or so. And there are candidates who have not been entirely forthcoming with their taxes who aren't named Trump.
Right, but you can go to jail for that.
No. You can't go to jail for being a political candidate who doesn't disclose his or her taxes. It is not a law. It is not a requirement.
Right. Well, you can go to jail for not paying them.
Yeah, tax evasion, right? Things like that, right.
Yeah, and he should, this guy should be impeached beyond impeachment. But why aren't the Democrats going forth with impeachment, Speaker Pelosi and the rest of them, why aren't they putting impeachment on the table?
What makes you think it's off the table?
Oh, well, they haven't talked about it too much.
I mean, Jesus, Rashida Tlaib said last week, we're going to impeach the motherfucker.
Right.
And caused countless Republicans to get the phantods and the vapors and have to get the smelling salts all out at the same time. Ooh, yeah. She called a motherfucker a motherfucker.
do they know what humanity is? I mean, are they like the Terminator, machines, mindless, soulless machines, programmed to do whatever they're programmed to do?
Nah, not really, Reggie. What they are is utterly oblivious to the needs of anyone except themselves.
Yeah, I mean, humans do swear, That's what
If life is good for white Republican America, life is good.
Yeah, they're obsessed over this. They're obsessed over Alexandria Cortez. I mean, the young kid, They're obsessed over her dancing. What does that have to do with her intellect?
Well, they're more obsessed over the fact that she's talking about going back to pre-Reagan marginal tax rates, and that is giving them the fantods. But the thing is, they don't even understand what she's talking about.
No, they don't.
Because marginal tax rates apply above a certain threshold.
Mm-hmm.
Because once upon a time we made a determination that there was such a thing as having enough money, and that when you reached a certain threshold of money, we were going to impose a hefty tax on it, because even with the hefty tax imposed, you'd still be really, really, really obscenely stinking filthy rich.
Right. And don't they have to pay taxes too, the rich?
The goal of the Republican Party is to reduce the rich tax burden to zero.
Oh, right. I mean, but we're all paying for it. The American taxpayer, we're all paying for it. Me and you, the average American taxpayer, the blue collar worker, we're not wealthy. We don't have all that kind of money that they have. We weren't born into it or inherited it. From our family, we have to pay taxes too, but it's harder, much harder on us than it is on them, because they got all the resources in the world and we don't. We have to work for those resources, right? We have to make another living, right?
Yeah. There's an old line out there from the ancient days of the labor movement. There's two kinds of people in this world, them that work and them that don't.
Yeah, and them that don't, why do they get all the perks and those that do, don't? We have to struggle and strive for ours. And we still don't get paid as much as we should, even though we work our asses off to the bone, right?
Right.
Right, and that ain't right, man. It isn't fair either, man. It isn't fair either. Just like those workers that aren't getting paid because of the government shutdown. I mean, the partial government shutdown.
Look, let's just call it the government shutdown, okay?
Yeah, the government shutdown.
Because there's nothing partial about it to somebody who's sitting there wondering if they're going to be able to pay for their fucking insulin, okay? And that is a real thing that's happening. You've got people out there who are rationing. You've got type 2 diabetics, brittle diabetics, who are out there rationing their insulin to themselves and hoping they can survive Donald Trump's attempt to murder them.
Yeah. And what about those who are sick, you know, like health care and Medicare and Medicaid and disability, you know, Social Security and all of that stuff? How are they going to get their check? You know, SSI, I guess, Social Security and disability checks. And you know, how are they going to be able to get well, you know, go to a hospital or a doctor or even a clinic to go check themselves out? What if they get hurt or sick or deathly ill, you know?
Or evicted. Or the transmission falls out of their car. We're talking about a vast swath of America that is living paycheck to paycheck.
Exactly. That's us, right? We're living paycheck to paycheck. My mother and my sister are. They're living paycheck to paycheck.
I mean, the number of American citizens who do not have so much as $400 set aside.
Right.
Is breathtaking for a country that calls itself the richest country on the planet and the best country on the planet and a Christian nation.
Do you think the entire world sees us as a laughing stock, Bob?
I don't think they see us as a laughing stock. I think they're worried sick.
They are.
Because they wonder what in the hell has happened to us.
We become weak. I don't know.
We've lost our minds.
Yeah, that too.
And more importantly, what was once viewed as arguably the most stable system of governance on the planet isn't anymore. I mean, there was a time when countries with parliamentary systems where a government can collapse overnight looked at us and said, well, that never happens to them.
Right. If only Hillary, I wish we had Hillary as president, the first female president. Or if Alexandria was like 10 years older, we could.
Well, I wish the hell we could have taken the Senate. We had a chance, but there were a series of mistakes and various and sundry forms of rat fuckery. I mean, you think about. I was no fan, but Heidi Heitkamp, like Joe Manchin, at least caucused with the Democrats. And she got done. She got done in by an effort to disenfranchise practically every Native American in the state of North Dakota.
Right.
Claire McCaskill. There was dirty dealings and voter suppression there. Phil Bredesen could have been senator from the state of Tennessee, but he had to open his mouth during the Kavanaugh hearings and got himself abandoned by a bunch of people who were at the time busting their ass to see him replace Corker so that they wouldn't have to have Senator Marsha Blackburn. Goodness.
Right.
The state of Tennessee has a brass-bound...
I wish we had like President Warren, you know, Elizabeth Warren or President Pelosi, whoever, running this country instead of him because he's screwing it all up for everybody. Not just for, but for the whole entire world, you know? He's screwing it up for everybody. And I would love to see him and his family go to prison, although I know that's wishful thinking on my part. What about you, Bob?
Well, I mean,
I guess
it gives us, it gives me some comfort to sit there and just sort of extrapolate out the string and see if there's any relief to be had. But the problem is that right now, I hate to use warfare analogies, but damn it, it's what we've got. The fact of the matter is, we are in that stage of the conflict. Where all we can really do is try to keep the other side from gaining more ground.
Right, but how do we do that, Bob?
You know, by 1941, the Third Reich had rolled across and essentially controlled all of Western Europe.
Yeah,
and it's referred to historically as Fortress Europa. And for the most part.
the Allies had to sit there and wait and plan and wait and plan until they could finally, you know, they got something. They ran the Germans out of North Africa. Then they attacked. Then they attacked in the boot of Italy, and began working their way up the Italian peninsula, all the while with Stalin screaming at Churchill and FDR to open a second front, because the Russians were absorbing the brunt of all the fire and fury of the Germans.
Right. And they're also scared of both Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders.
Well,
you guys could take them all on.
Well, I mean, let's go back and finish the analogy, Reggie.
Yeah, go ahead.
And so for all those long years, Russia was fighting pretty much by itself in the ground war in the Europe, while
right.
the planning went on for the full-scale invasion of Europe that eventually began on June the 6th, 1944. Well, the first half of 1944, all of 1943, the best part of, that's 4 years that the Russians were sitting there saying, Jesus, all we can do is hope to hold them. We cannot beat them.
And
that's kind of where we are.
And there are
hopeful signs. You have to look and you have to dig to find them, Reggie, but there are hopeful signs. For instance, today,
yeah.
Trump invited a bunch of godforsaken Republicans to the White House to talk about the shutdown and how much he wants that goddamn wall.
Yeah.
And he invited some perceived to be moderate to conservative Democrats, all of whom said, nope, you didn't invite our leader, you didn't invite Nancy Pelosi, we're not coming.
Right.
And we will sit down and negotiate with you about the wall when the government is open.
Right. What was his response to all of that? I'm assuming.
Well, I haven't read his tweets lately, but I'm sure it didn't sit well with him because he thinks he's the God Emperor of America.
Right. And we let him get away with it. Well, not we, but they let him get away with it. They let them get away with it. But, they let them get away with it. But I feel, like I said, I feel sorry for those workers who are out of work because of him and due to him. I feel very sorry for those who have kids. I'm sure they do. And pets, too. How are they going to feed them? They can barely feed themselves. You know what I mean?
How are the people who are being sacrificed this way going to do anything at all?
I don't know.
And to the extent that there are liberal millionaires and billionaires out there, it's time for them to pony up and start paying for buses, sleeping bags, tents, food. Call Jose Andres and see if he'll feed them. And let 800,000 people go to Washington, D.C. and not leave until they get to go back to work.
Right, like a protest?
Well, not a protest like you do it. You show up on Friday, you protest on Saturday, and you're gone on Sunday. No, I'm talking about an occupation.
Oh, right.
Occupy D.C.
Right.
800,000 strong.
Right. Will it be televised, Bob? Should it be televised?
I'm not a media executive, but I can guarantee you that if 800,000 show up in D.C., there will be all kinds of citizen journalist media going on there.
Right. I wonder how Trump would feel about that. Oh, he showed up at the White House with him in it.
If 250,000 people surrounded the White House, there wouldn't be. There's not enough cops in D.C. to arrest them all. There's not enough capacity to arrest them all.
Right. There's not enough law enforcement to arrest them all.
Yeah.
Or to tell them to leave.
And you know what? Maybe since some of those people are probably working, like the federal police, since they're probably working some of them are working without a payday, they might not be terribly inclined to go in and arrest people who are trying to get them paid.
What, you think they'll join in?
I don't think they'd join in, but no.
But but they won't arrest them either because they're not getting paid. I mean, this is ridiculous, man. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. All because the Democrats won't give them $5.7 million, which they know we don't have. You know, we're going broke, like I said. This country's going broke. I thought we were up in I thought we were drowning in debt. I thought this country was drowning in debt, right, Bob? Isn't this country still in debt, Bob, or is it just me again?
No. It's not just you. It just depends on what you consider drowning in debt. We weren't drowning in debt enough to keep Trump and the Republicans in Congress from jacking the deficit up by $1 trillion.
Right. And you know, right. And yeah, right. But you know, he still might do it if nobody tries to stop him. But he'll still try to do it if nobody tries to stop him. And you know, they don't want any high tax. You know, they don't want people to raise taxes on them, but they want to raise taxes on us. You know, those who can't afford to pay taxes. You know, they can't afford to pay any more than they have, or they already have. What do you have to say about that, Bob?
Yeah, I think you've said it perfectly adequately.
Right. I think they want to raise tax prices on us, and we all wind up being homeless. You know, if we let it go that far. You know, but we have to do something. The government has to do something within their power. You know, we got to do something, man. We got to do something. I hope the Democrats do the very best that they can with all the power they have. You know, Speaker Pelosi and the rest of them under her command. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, her, Joe Biden, you know, the rest of them. I wonder how former President Barack Obama is feeling right now. Well, him and Bill Clinton.
I don't know. How do you think they should feel?
They probably pissed at him. They probably pissed off at him for doing this. They probably are. I mean, why is he taking it out on them? The American worker. Well, what have we done to him?
Well, but Reggie, you fail to understand that what this shutdown represents is a wet dream for Republicans. There are Republicans out there who are writing essays even as we speak, talking about how this proves that the government is too big. That this is somehow a sort of experiment showing that we really can make government small enough to drown in a bathtub.
Right. But if any Democratic president, like, I'll go back to LBJ, JFK, LBJ, Jimmy Carter, Bill Clinton, and Barack Obama, if they did that, what would happen? What would they say about that?
Well, it did happen on Obama's watch, and they said it was the Obama shutdown.
Yeah. And they never let him live it down, either. You know they'll go after him. But now that we're going after Trump, it's like they think we're obsessed with him. You know what I mean? They're trying to defend him. You know what I'm saying?
They have to defend him. Reggie, they have to defend him. They're compromised, okay? I'm not just saying this. We know. We don't guess. We know that massive amounts of Russian money was funneled, laundered through the National Rifle Association and into the campaign coffers of all manner of Republican members of Congress, not just the presidential campaign of Donald Trump.
Right.
We know. We don't suspect. We don't surmise. We know that the Russians hacked both the RNC and the DNC. They only released the DNC material to harm the Democrats. They hung on to the compromat material that they had on the Republicans, and they are twisting the screws with it even as we speak.
Yeah, he claimed that he never worked for or with Russia. President Trump never claimed. He said he never claimed.
That's Trump. I'm talking about. I'm talking about Lindsey Graham. I'm talking about Mitch McConnell. I'm talking about Rand Paul.
Right.
I'm talking about Ted Cruz. I'm talking about John Cornyn. I'm talking about Joni Ernst. I'm talking about all of these Republican freaks who have had their hands out to the NRA forever, and in 2016 got their palms greased with rubles.
Right, and they've been doing that for them ever since. They've been doing that for them ever since. They've been living off their money ever since. Russian money, right?
Well, that's what it was in 2016, and they're busted, and they know that if it comes out, they're going to go down with Trump. They have gotten in his boat, and it has sprung leaks, and they're doing everything to keep from going down with him.
Well, they're trying to distance themselves from him, dissociate themselves from him. In fact, they're turning on him.
No, not yet. No, not yet. I mean, Chinless Mitch said today, Reggie, that the reason he won't let any bills go forward to reopen the government is because he agrees with Donald Trump about his racist wall.
Right. What about Lindsey Graham? You know, the pearl clutch. The pearl clutch.
The Russians own him, too. He couldn't take enough NRA money. Right. Because if we don't know what they found in those RNC emails, by God, the people whose RNC emails the Russians got know what the Russians got, because it is being used to blackmail them, because kompromat is the heart and soul of Russian manipulation. Sex, money, drugs, any illicit conduct.
Yeah. And so you think that they own the Republicans, the Russians own the Republicans, hook, line, sinker, hook, line, and sinker. You think they own them? You know, hook, line, sinker?
Yes.
Oh, they see.
When I was a young guy, when I was just starting out in radio, there was a radio station in my hometown that accepted money to run the daily report from the John Birch Society. It was called the Alan Stang Report, and every day you could tune in to WBCF AM radio. And you could hear the Alan Stang report, in which Alan Stang reported on what a communist Ronald Reagan was.
Right. Right. So he went after Ronald Reagan.
The John Birch Society said that Dwight D. Eisenhower was a commie simp. And that, everybody was a commie simp except Alan Stang and the John Birch Society. And so I grew up with that crazy shit on a daily basis, but now I live in a country where the president really is an asset of the Russian government.
Right. Well, Hillary Clinton already said and stated he was a Russian puppet.
Not a puppet. Not a puppet. Correct. You're the puppet. That's all he had.
Exactly.
He's a 72-year-old man baby. That's all. I'm rubber. You're glue. It bounces off me and sticks to you.
Yeah, and that's what we have for presidents, or as president. And, you know, she came out with facts. He came out with lies, fictional fantasy lies. And yet he won. And now he's our president. I think she got mistreated and disrespected. The victory was snatched out of her hand. You know what I mean? It was snatched out of her hand.
It was stolen.
It was stolen.
It was stolen.
It was stolen. Just like 2000 and 2004. Remember 2000? George W. Bush and Al Gore. That was stolen too,
Sure.
It was. Yeah. And I hope this never happens again, man.
Well, the only way it's not going to happen again is if we take control of the House, the Senate, and the presidency in 2020, begin work in 2021, pass a bill increasing the size of the Supreme Court, neutralize those right-wing Nazi turds on the Supreme Court, and then get about the business of tearing out everything Donald Trump did root and branch, so that there is not so much as a memory of his presidency or the compliant, complicit, collaborating Republicans who helped to make it happen.
Yeah, and reinstate paper ballots too, man.
Like I said, there's a list, Reggie. There's a list, brother. Hey, I got folks on hold, so let me roll on. But it's good to talk to you, my friend. You take care.
Yeah, you do too, Bob.
All right. Later now.
All right.
Bye.
All right. Bye, man.
From Decatur, Georgia, that's our buddy Reggie. And we're going right back over to the Skype line in a moment. But I got to send out some thank yous. I got to thank James. And I've got to thank our buddy Hung Like Jesus. I am proud to announce that... we are down to, $365 to go in fundraising for the evening. That's tremendous. Thank you very, very much to John and James and Hung Like Jesus. That's $365 to go, $165 to finish off yesterday's fundraising. Thanks, everybody. Hopefully they'll get some more company, and we won't be talking about, you know, nearly $600 for prayer meeting Wednesday. That would be great if we could make that not be the case. And onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, what's happening?
Well, everything in the blind is going to shit.
Is the water frozen in the blind and you can't even see the ducks anymore?
Well, no. The water is frozen, and the ex-wife brought crutch tips for me. But I called Representative Carson's office today to see if the Social Security office and the food stamp office were open, and I'd heard rumors that they were going to be cutting off SNAP in February, and she said she wasn't sure that I had to contact their office to find out. But no, what I was calling about was I feel like I'm hitting my head against a damn brick wall, because it's getting to the point where I don't feel like I'm going to get anywhere, even if I go down to the local Republican senator's office, which is only like 6 blocks from where I live, and ask them to at least have the courtesy to tell me they want me dead instead of just dragging it out. I don't know, man. On the good side, I've been doing a little missionary work for the Horn, and as soon as I show Christine how to get on Patreon, she'll be joining the Patreon side of the family community congregation. So, I take your point about the John Birch Society. Those guys are still the ghost of the Birch Society is still in existence. You know, when they call Ronald Reagan a damn commie, you know that they're not going to be satisfied with anybody short of Adolf Hitler.
About the size of it.
That's what they think they've got with Trump. The problem is they're looking at the wrong country. He loves his country, all right, when he retires to Russia when they oust him from office. I'll bet any amount of money in my pocket that Vladimir looks over at the United States government and goes, no, he's Russian citizen now. You can't touch him.
Yeah, I don't think they can quite pull that off, but I get your point. No, yeah, you know, one of the things I worry about more than others, and I worry about a lot of things, Dave, is that, and there are just, you know what I mean when I say my spidey sense is tingling.
Yeah.
There's just something in me that thinks he may not survive to the end of this term. Not because anybody's going to do anything to him or because I want anything to happen to him.
He's going to stroke out because of all the junk food and crap he's eating.
I wonder how many of those 300 burgers he wolfed down on his own yesterday.
Probably 300. I was listening to the radio, and a college basketball coach came on, and he said that the first thing he tells his players every season is no more junk food. No more Wendy's, no more McDonald's, no more, you know.
No, and the best part was the piece of video I saw after the program last night where one of the Clemson players was going through the line and looking at all the Big Macs and Dave's juicy singles and whatever, saying, I thought this was a joke.
Yeah.
Apparently the whole team didn't show up. It was mostly, from the photos I saw, it was mostly the the white boys on the team. I didn't see if their quarterback, who looks like Celine Dion, showed up. He really does. I mean,
maybe they snuck Celine in and didn't realize it.
But
she only talks every other day.
Among other things, you remember who Reggie Bush is, right? Former NFL running back, star running back for USC, Reggie Bush.
Yeah.
He said that Trump serving them hamburgers yesterday was disrespectful on so many levels and, quote, a huge slap in the face.
Yeah.
And then today he tweets, they were great players and big. They were great players and big eaters.
This guy is not just an embarrassment, Bob. He's a world danger.
Yeah, he is. He is.
Needs to be sent to the world court for.
I mean, that's why I talked in the first hour about NATO relative. You know, not just as a buffer against the old Soviet Union or the modern Russia, but as a means of keeping Europe from tearing itself to pieces and slaughtering itself.
Well, I emailed you earlier about how I thought that. These Republicans are wanting to turn the United States into another North Korea. They're so isolationist and they're so xenophobic that, and I'm not joking, within 15 to 16 years, you could see something like a South Korea happen in the United States. And can you imagine the death and destruction? That would make Nazi Germany look like a walk in the park.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and by the way, just going back to the shallowness of the hamburger business, Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags got into the act. The president had to pay for the food himself because the Democrats refused to negotiate on border security. Much of the resident staff at the White House is furloughed.
Here's the thing, Bob. Like I said about the medical staff, a good number of the kitchen staff at the White House are also military.
You mean like line chefs and sous chefs who were taught to cook by the Navy?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Army.
My ex-wife was trained as a medical cook in the Army, and she was about to be sent when she was poisoned with PCP. She was going to be on her way to Germany to study under German chefs. And then she was going to be sent to her permanent unit, probably in Germany.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, I did just find out that Celine Dion did show up. There were 75 members of the team, but it was not the entire team.
Did she sing?
No, this is her lookalike, you know, Trevor Lawrence, the quarterback for Clemson.
Okay.
I was kind of
hoping that, you know, he'd be the entertainment.
No, the entertainment was, unfortunately for them, Donald Trump.
Oh God.
By the way, when he was tweeting about how gloriously he fed the Clemson football team, he gave us a new word. You remember Covfefe?
Yes, Covfefe.
Right. Well,
yes,
this morning he said, because of the shutdown, I served the massive amounts of fast food, capital F's, paren, I paid over 1,000 hamburgers, et cetera. Hamburgers.
So
hamburders. Hamburgers.
So when I'm speaking in thumbs, I have to now add hamburgers to it. Okay. I'll remember that. I think I'll put that in between Cafefe and something else. So, okay, yeah, I got it. Yeah, the good thing is that I provisioned the blind today, and I don't have to go out and deal with them. But my ex-wife and I were at lunch today, and I heard two old guys at the Steak and Shake looking over and going,
"You've got a Steak and Shake?"
Fox News. Yes, sir, I do. I got them all over Taliban Annapolis. You need to come out here, and I'll show you. I've got Steak and Shake. I got White Castles.
Yeah, you can keep the White Castles, but we don't have Steak and Shakes in West Virginia, of course. But I love how they turn their burgers. Their burgers look like little sausage patties and they're frozen.
Oh yeah,
they're pucks. And then those expert—I mean, we're talking about people who really are good at their jobs, and of course they're paid crap wages. But they've got two flat spatulas in their hands. They throw that puck on that blazing hot griddle, and they go to work squishing it, and it gets
and the
bigger.
Crispy edges.
Yeah, and it gets bigger and it gets thinner until the outer edge is just this perfect crunchy hamburger lace.
Yes.
Whoa.
Well, they have one. Bob, they have a portobello with sautéed onions and Swiss cheese now.
Ugh.
A double steak burger. All of them are steak cuts. They don't use.
Yeah, yeah, they're not. It's
throwaway cuts.
Right, and for the longest time, Steak and Shake was my favorite fast food burger, until I encountered Culver's.
Now, I haven't had Culver's, but I have had Five Guys.
Yeah, Five Guys, I don't get so worked up. I mean,
I don't get worked up about a double bacon cheeseburger and fries and a drink that costs me $15.
Bingo. The fact of the matter is I can go to Outback and sit down and eat steak for what it takes to Agnes and I can go eat steak for what it takes to eat at Five Guys. On the other hand, you're in Taliban, Indiana. I'd check around. I'm almost betting there's a Culver's somewhere near you. I mean, Jesus Christ, if there's a Culver's in North Georgia, there's a Culver's in Indianapolis.
Well, I'll have to see, Bob. I mean, after all, this is the Horn, the home of the food porn channel.
Well, we got to do something to keep from. Yeah.
We got to make ourselves enjoyable. Like Todd says, you know, life's too short to eat bad food.
Right.
You know.
Oh, and by the way, Culver's makes their own ice cream fresh every day. If you're an ice cream guy.
You know that wine I was telling you about last week?
Yeah.
The cherry cobbler wine?
Mm-hmm.
I went on the website. It is available in West Virginia.
No kidding.
Yep, it's made by Oliver Wineries, and you can probably pick it up at your local Kroger.
I'll look.
If it's in season. It's a seasonal, so if not, just let me know next time we talk, and I'll shoot you an email with their link, and you can go.
Oh, go ahead and send it along, and I'll be looking.
All right. I'll go ahead and do that. And
and meanwhile, are you a cheese curds kind of guy?
I've never had.
Oh, see, no, you're gonna
but
have.
I'm one of those guys that if it's not liver, I'll eat it.
Well, look, a butter burger and cheese curds with a concrete mixer from Culver's will satisfy all your basic food group needs. And probably significant, and probably do real damage to your arterial blood lipids.
Jerky.
What?
Better than bacon jerky. I mean, that covers two of the food groups. Right
well, that's
there.
That's true. But I mean, you got your cheese food group. You got your you got your batter food group. You got your ice cream food group. You got your meat food group. Your hamburger bun food group. Your pickles and onions food group.
It reminds me of when I was a kid. When I tell my mom, yeah, but the food portion of my stomach is full, but the ice cream portion is not.
I experienced that just the other day. Agnes and I and our daughter and the grandkids went out to breakfast, and lo and behold, one of my grandkids could not finish her biscuits and gravy, but proudly announced to us that she did have room for carrot cake.
Well, after all, she's grandpa's.
At which point, Opa, Ging Ging, and Mommy all looked at her and said, "Now, do you really? How about that? It's a miracle." And she's just old enough to really not appreciate the adult sarcasm.
Yeah, well, she's a little young to be initiated into the cult of irony.
Yeah, exactly. And by the way, we're getting notes now about Culver's. Jenny says, Wisconsin company, not ice cream, custard. That's true. It's frozen custard.
Yeah, it is custard.
Culver's and beer and cheese. Yeah, Culver's and beer and cheese curds and fresh water. Dang, that's why I'd never leave Wisconsin again.
There is a Culver's.
I know there's got to be in Indianapolis.
Because you said custard, and that reminded me, there is one, and it's like it's like 3 miles from my place. But right now, they're closed for the season.
For the season?
They don't keep them open. They don't keep them open here for the winter.
Well, I'll be dead.
Because they don't do all the burgers and all that.
I'll be darned.
It's simply custard.
Because I'm pretty sure they're still open there in Thomasville, Georgia. I was just astonished to see that there was one down there.
The place you need to go here is a place called Pizza King. It's one of the oldest fast food restaurants in the country, and they have something called the Royal Feast, which is like all the sausage and pepperoni. The pepperoni is not the little discs of pepperoni. It's the little hunks, little cubes.
And
it's all over, and it's just covered in cheese, and the crust is almost like a beer crust. I mean, it's a real yeast crust, and oh, you bite into that thing, Bob. Oh my God. It's something to behold, but the Pizza Kings here in Indianapolis are not as good as in my hometown. And
namely,
my brother. Yeah,
your hometown is
Muncie, Indiana.
Oh, Muncie, yeah. Okay.
The butt of all jokes.
Right, yeah. the home of Ball State.
The home of Ball State. There are three Muncies in the United States. Muncie, Indiana is the one that gets most of the jokes, primarily because Dave Letterman used to live, work, and go to school there. But if you want to see a funny movie that captures the people from my hometown, The Hudsucker Proxy.
Oh, I know that. Yes.
Yes. And that... You know, because Tim Robbins playing the Rube out of water is basically.
I mean, that's the Coen brothers, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, Hudsucker Proxy, yeah, Barton Fink.
It was one of the. I believe it was one of the last movies that Paul Newman did. Because he played an executive in that. And it was all... The story revolves around how the hula hoop came to be. It's very weird and very campy. But I have begun watching The Big Lebowski.
Oh!
I've gotten to the point where they're about to drop off the ransom, but...
Well, nobody will say anything because if this is your first trip through, you'll get some out of it, but it's only on rerun 2, 3, 4, 5, and you know that you that it really begins to grow on you.
Right. Well, I heard you and Scott talking about it the other night. You were telling him about the third time through, you'll get it. But I love the dude's attitude, man. I was in a blue funk the other night when I started watching it, and I was like 10 minutes in, and I just started laughing.
And see, that's the thing. Have you at least heard the line "Shut the fuck up, Donnie" yet?
Yes. Yes, I've been there.
Do we not need T-shirts with Donald Trump's face on it that just say "Shut the fuck up, Donnie"?
Well, the other one, the first line he says to Donnie was, "You're out of your depth, Donnie." He does it like 3 or 4 times, and then he finally says, "Shut the fuck up, Donnie." And I had to laugh because I love that whole scene. I love all the actors in it. It's just Steve. Oh my God! You've got, and it takes place during the Gulf War, right around that time.
Yeah, because the dude uses a George H. W. Bush line. This aggression will not stand, man.
I'm gonna get, as soon as the program's over, I'm gonna head back over and commune with the dude for a while.
I highly recommend it.
I need it. I say the dude needs to run for president. He can't be worse than what we got.
Well, no.
All right, Bob. I'll get off here so other people can talk.
All right, Dave. You take care. Watch yourself there in the blind.
Well, you know, I ventured out and dealt with a couple of Trumpanzees, but I may have to go beard a couple in their offices. So, wish me luck.
Before you go, we have a question. Ron in Raleigh has a question. Yes. Is Muncie, Indiana, where they made the old Muncie Rock Crusher 4-speed transmissions?
Very possibly, because there was a Chevy plant there when I was a kid. I don't know if it's still there. I haven't been there in 35 years. But it is where the Ball Mason Jars, the Ball Company?
Sure.
They were headquartered there. They were founded there. As a matter of fact, their founders are buried there.
Probably in Ball Mason jars.
Yeah.
Just really big ones.
Yeah. Well, no, their crypts are pretty elaborate. I mean,
that doesn't mean there can't be a Mason jar inside.
Well, that's true. My mother wanted to be. Buried in one.
Yeah, don't spoil my fantasy, Dave.
Well, I mean, mom wanted to be buried in a Mason jar, but my sister thought better of it.
If you extracted all the bullshit from Julius Geezer, you could bury him in a thimble.
Well, I used to live across the street when I was in Muncie from a funeral home, and one of my dad's friends was a funeral director, and he said, "Joe, you're so full of shit, I can stick an enema up you and bury you in a shoebox." So, you're not too far off. But I think there's just a tad more shit in Donnie.
Well, that's one of those deep philosophical questions. Dave, have yourself a good evening, my friend.
All right, you too, Bob.
Later.
Bye.
Bye now. Our buddy Dave from Taliban, Indiana, calling from the blind. That's... Hey, look, the lights are back on in Kansas City. I've been following Carol Baker's travails over the course of the last several days. You know how Brad Friedman pointed out that they're not updating weather models because of the shutdown. Well, and so therefore they can, the weather guys get things wrong. Carol was expecting a 2-inch snow and got, well, what, 9? Was it 9, Carol?
11.3.
Beautiful. And took out your power grid in the process, right?
From Friday night until 3 minutes ago.
Wow. And
yeah, it's cold.
Are all your pipes busted?
No, because the temperature hovered right at freezing for all through this time. And then we're supposed to get another 6 inches dumped on us and an ice storm. And then it's supposed to be sub-zero.
Well, I saw a forecast for the football game this weekend, you know, the Chiefs and the Pats.
Oh, yeah.
And they said it was going to be the coldest AFC championship possibly in a generation.
Oh, yeah. I'm looking at the 10-day forecast here, and it is supposed to. So I'm crossing my fingers that I keep the power that I just got back, since I was the last to get it back. They're talking really like I'm supposed to wake up Sunday morning to or Saturday morning or Saturday night, supposed to get down to 3 below. 6 below on Sunday. Yeah,
that's going to be so not fun. In all seriousness, I mean, do you have heat?
I do now. I didn't. My house is all electric, so when it knocks the furnace out, that's it, and that means you have a limited amount of time to use up the last of the hot water and get the hell out of there.
And you basically lived at work for the last several days, right?
I did, because my sweet little Mexican boys brought me a mattress and a box springs and put it at the head of my desk. And then one of them went to my house and got Cat Stevens and delivered him to me.
Oh,
I know. So he's been the office cat, and he's been so obnoxious.
Really? Obnoxious? Cat Stevens? Who'd have thought?
Who'd have thunk it? Cats are assholes, I swear.
Yeah, but they don't make any bones about it, so at least they're not hypocrites.
He just walks around knocking shit off the desk, and then as soon as somebody yells at him, he turns around and looks and gives him the sweetest look. And then they all go, oh.
Well, yeah, it's like the adorable little black cat here crawling in the bag where the tacos were.
The one that was plotting your death, the black one?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes, yes.
Yeah, just looking so adorable, and then, you know, you can't resist, so you reach your little hand in there and you pull out a bloody stump, you know.
Yeah, I could have told you that one was coming.
Yeah, well, there's a learning curve. I've been a dog guy most of my life, but I'm learning. But
well, I'm a dog person. I like to, but I'm cured.
Well, I was gonna ask you though, based on something you and I talked about. Now you just now got electricity back, but that's not the case for a lot of Kansas City, is it?
Oh no! See, if you live on the Johnson County, Kansas side, if you live in the rich neighborhoods, I want you to be assured they're gonna get to you first. And you see, there's a racial dividing line here in Kansas City, and it's called Troost Avenue. Which is, my office is on Troost Avenue. And if you're west of Troost Avenue, then you're on the paler side of town. And if you live east of Troost, and of course everybody's, and I'm like, oh, I live right off Troost. And people are like,
which side?
Not east of Troost. Yeah. And I'm like, east of Troost, like a block and a half. It's not like, it's not like I went searching for the most dangerous place to live. I had the most wonderful neighbors. There were 2 notes on the door when I got home of people worried about where I was. And these were my neighbors. And, I look like a marshmallow in a box of raisins in that neighborhood. They don't care.
Well, that's usually the case.
So, and they're always the first ones to take care of me. And I was running home like every, you know, three or four times a day, just trying to see if they'd finally gotten to the wrong colors in the white trash. And of course we were the first ones out and the last ones to get our power back on.
Naturally, because because the infrastructure has been entirely an afterthought for all of that.
Well, it really has, and and you want to get to the million-dollar homes first. I'm sorry. These people can't be inconvenienced.
Well, I mean, those are serious ratepayers there, Carol. I mean, you can't hold that against them.
Yeah, well, you know, and of course, I sat on hold for an hour and 37 minutes trying to get through on the line.
Your call is very important to us. Please continue to hold.
I thought, let me not pay my bill 1 month. You motherfuckers know right where I am all of a sudden.
They don't even have to bring out the tracking dogs. They can find you with no problem whatsoever.
It's freaky. They're like my mother.
Well, that can be more than a little bit disturbing under the circumstances. But so during this time when you've been more or less out of your home, you have, however, I can tell from your post, been paying attention to the news.
Oh, God, yes.
I hardly, you know, it's been a while since we talked. I hardly know where to begin out here on the ledge.
Well, you know, it's like we could have picked up from our last conversation and nothing really would have been different, would it?
Not really. Not really.
Well, so he's essentially normalized batshit crazy.
Treason.
And he is doing things that no other president could ever get away with in the world. But because he's got a bunch of co-conspirators sitting in the Senate, you know, he can't be touched. So, you know, I don't know what it's going to take, because the 33% of the country that's with him, they're always going to be winning. Doesn't matter. They have a million excuses for why they think he's so wonderful and perfect. And I just point and laugh and mock him on Twitter, you know, the important stuff.
Oh, well, and you do a magnificent job of it, I must note. But it's been a long time. You know, for years and years and years, Juanita down in Florida was our View correspondent.
Yes.
And I haven't...
Oh, God.
I haven't seen a View post like what you put up today in a very, very long time.
Oh, my God. I'm telling you, it was a total catfight. Total catfight.
Meow.
Meghan McCain had her claws out instantly. And it wasn't even... The thing that precipitated it wasn't even anything that was necessarily... She should not have gone off like that. But it was the, I am John McCain's daughter, and how dare you? And I was like, oh, you need to back the fuck up, sister. Because, Meg, honey, first of all, you know, I'm not okay with racism. My party isn't a racist. Nobody said all Republicans were racist. We said that if we met a racist, they were probably a Republican. And her daddy was the one who railed against making Martin Luther King's birthday a national holiday, and he voted against it repeatedly. So I think she needed to sit her lily white ass down and tell me again about how a wall isn't a wasteful racist monument to the Fuhrer. And I don't want to hear any of her horse shit about border security, because we all know that that's not where the terrorists come from. It's not where the bulk of the drugs come from. It just isn't.
No, I mean, it's like the exchange between Kamala Harris and William Barr today, in which, you know, he said he was a lot of drugs come through ports of entry, but you know, they also come through the open border there. And look, since the Republicans are having a conniption about Steve King, a conniption they should have had, you know, 16 years ago.
Exactly. It's like, guys, he's been talking like this for 16 years, and all of a sudden, everyone has just clutched their pearls and hit their fainting couches. There seemed to be a plethora of them, since Lindsay's in the lead. And I'm like, how is this surprising? He has been 16 years of Donald Trump with better hair.
Well, not only that, though, but when Barr said today, yeah, but the drugs are still coming through the unfenced part of the border, he was adopting the language of Steve King. Remember when Steve King talked about the guys carrying bales of marijuana who had calves like cantaloupes?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's been playing on TV nonstop.
Yeah, I feel so far ahead of the curve, Carol, because I've been referring to him as Steve Cantaloupe's King ever since.
Oh, I know.
It's almost like a prophet is not welcome in his own in his own country.
Don't you hate it when that happens?
All the time, because I got another one of those since we were talking about water and everything. Mm-hmm. We were talking a lot way back. You remember when the Freedom disaster happened?
Oh hell yeah! Oh yeah, and where you were explaining how most of the water isn't even ever getting, the treated water is like never getting through the pipes.
I talked about. About the fact that the infrastructure that they pumped the water through was tainted and corrupted, and the whole damn system needed to be dug up and replaced. And we actually sat with some people who were really good at ciphering back then and did some math, and the actual cost of what happened in Charleston ran into the billions of dollars.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it turns out we were right.
I know.
It only took 5 years to find out, but we were right.
You guys were Flint before Flint was Flint.
Well, yeah, and just like Flint, the ongoing involuntary experiment of the effects on those chemicals on the human system continues to go on and will go on for the next 25 years.
Yeah, but, you know, they're testing it out on poor white trash, so.
Yeah, hillbilly there, hillbilly, you know. Takes a long time for a bunch of dead hillbillies to actually add up to anything, Carol.
Expendables.
I mean, we don't call it a sacrifice zone for nothing.
There you go.
But there it was on the pages of the Gazette, who does great work. And, of course, we didn't have the wherewithal to do any massive science, but the thing, you know, is like that old Latin phrase, res ipsa loquitur. The thing speaks for itself.
Of course.
And so we find out that ratepayers who pay for their water to West Virginia Water, well, something like 50% or more of the water that they treat never gets anywhere.
Yeah.
It leaks out of the pipes into the ground. Mm-hmm. So guess what else leaked out of the pipes into the ground?
Yeah, the chemical.
Methylchlorohexane methanol.
Well, I'm sure that's something that's naturally occurring in the human body, right?
Yeah, no, and it hasn't soaked through to China yet either.
God, I
hate it when that happens. But I thought of that when you said, you know, we can basically just pick up where we left off.
Exactly. We haven't missed it. It's like the soap opera that I used to watch when I worked nights. I'd be up during the day and I'd watch the soap opera. And then for some reason I would get off of not watching it. And as I was leaving, the phone would ring. And 3 months later, I would turn it on and the person would be going, hello? So it's like the storyline moves so slowly that we just are better predictors, or as Gerald calls us, better expert guessers.
Yes.
Than the average person. That's all. I'm just like used to it. And the only thing, I just keep going back to the only thing we have to share is our misery. So I mock them and share it with people and try and cheer people up a little bit every day. It's all
you're a giver.
Because I am a giver. Speaking of givers, can I tell you a personal story?
You absolutely can.
You know, I've got my Ancestry.com account, and I did my DNA a couple years ago. Thought it was pretty fascinating and everything. And they tell you, you know, when, you know, distant relatives pop up and So just out of curiosity, I had Barbie do one because I wanted to see, you know, if we both came out of the same litter. And she laughed, like, and of course it came up immediate family. My brother John took one, came up immediate family. And here about 4 months ago, somebody popped up and it was like, this is your first cousin. And I was like, I know all my first cousins. So I'm looking at this.
Oh, really?
And I sent this guy a message and I'm like, I know all my first cousins. Who the hell are you? And he goes, well, I was adopted, so I actually don't know who the hell I am. And I was like, oh, really? So this kind of, him being a first cousin and all, it kind of narrows it down since there were only three kids in mom's family and three kids in dad's family. I was like, so when were you born? He tells me. And I'm like, well, my brother Michael's 3 months older than you are, so that kind of leaves out my mom and dad. So so that only left. And I said, and he goes, well, I did have a clue. He said, it isn't much of one. He goes, but my birth grandmother left a note and a little handmade outfit.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, really? And I said, do you have a copy of the note? He goes, yeah. He scanned it and he sent it to me. It was my mother's mother. So that means
really?
That the child had to either belong to my uncle or my aunt. And I couldn't imagine it being my uncle. But the thing that was so weird was he was born in Wyoming. And I was like, Wyoming? And so I thought about it. And I was like, I'm almost sure you've got to be my aunt's kid. Because back in those days, you know, they sent girls away. And so I sat and sorted all this thing out. Anyway, I called my cousin Scott in Reno, Nevada, who would be his half brother.
You've got family.
Yeah. And I was like, Scott, can I talk to you about something? And he goes, yeah, sure. And I said, well, this came up on my Ancestry account. And I said, you know, I'm almost sure you got yourself a half brother out there somewhere. And I said, I don't know how to tell you, cuz, but it's a boy. And he started laughing. He goes, well, I think it's kind of cool, actually. And he goes, but I'll be honest with you. He goes, I'll remember a fight that my folks had. He goes, you know how you hear things when you're a little kid? You won't think of them for 50 years until one of your cousins calls you up and says they think you have a brother. And then it all comes back to you. And I said, well, no, but I'm going to take your word for it. And I said, so what did you hear? He said, my folks were having this really vicious fight. And my father made some comment about, well, at least I didn't have a bastard child and the son of a sailor. And he said, swear to God, he said, I never thought about it until this moment. He said, I couldn't have been more than six.
Oh, my God. Son of a sailor, no less. You're related. You're related to Jimmy Buffett.
I'm related to somebody in the United States Navy. I said, well, do you want to tell him? You want me to? He goes, you're the one who figured it out. He goes, you tell him. And he goes, besides that, you say it prettier because my cousin's funny. And so I called him back and I said, look, I'm almost certain that this is the situation. And he said, well, I've been trying to get my adoption records opened for 35 years, and the state of Wyoming absolutely will not budge on this. And so he went back. My aunt had actually just passed away, like maybe a couple of years before my mom. So she's been gone for like 5 years. And I sent him a copy of her death certificate that I had gotten from my cousin. And he went back. This week, he went back to Wyoming. He drove all the way to Cheyenne from Laramie, gave him a copy of my aunt's death certificate and copies of all my emails. And they handed him 5 pages of his adoption records, unredacted. And my aunt is his mother. And some sailor from Cincinnati was his father. And I know there's a song in there somewhere, but I haven't quite worked that out yet.
Well, you got to, because there is.
But he is actually a really nice man. And I just, I've reassured him that my aunt did the kindest thing for him she could ever, ever, ever have done. Because unlike the rest of us, he was not raised by wolves. His adopted parents were lovely people, gave him a wonderful life. And he didn't want to openly start looking for his birth parents until they both passed, which hasn't been that long. So he got to talk to both of his brother, his half-brothers and his half-sister this weekend. I called my uncle, who travels extensively. He was in Beijing, China, when I called him. And he had to repeat it all aloud about 18 times before he got it through his head. But he called. He called him in Wyoming. And he just sent me a lovely letter. And he said, you know, this is all your fault. And I wrote back and I said, well, thank you for channeling my mother.
and, reaching out from the grave.
Absolutely. And he's just, it's been a lot for him to take in. It's all real now, and it's been a lot for him to take in. And so I have a wonderful first cousin out in Wyoming, and my uncle is coming back to the States, and we're all meeting in Reno, where his two brothers and his sister live.
Have you seen a photo yet?
I have seen a photo. He looks just like my cousin Marty.
Oh, my God.
He does.
Well, you know, I mentioned Jimmy Buffett a minute ago as a joke because, you know, there's that Son of a Sailor song.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But then you mentioned the Sailors from Cincinnati.
Exactly.
Well, there's a Jimmy Buffett song that begins with she, but we can change it to he. He came down from Cincinnati. It took him 3 days on the train. This just gets better by the minute.
It absolutely does. So, yeah, it's been kind of a topsy-turvy kind of a couple of months, but it all came to fruition. And when I opened up those documents and I saw my aunt's signature and my grandmother's signature as the witness, my aunt purposely misspelled her last name to try and throw everybody off track. Yeah, she spelled Haynes, H-A-I-N-E-S.
And it was a Y?
We spell it like the underwear fortune, of which we'll never see any.
Oh, H-A-N-E-S.
Yeah. Yeah, that's my mom's family. But I was able to share with him photos of his grandfather and his great-grandfather and his great-great-grandfather and his great-great-grandfather's floating sawmill and, all of this stuff. And he's just a really good guy. He's retired. His wife is a retired math teacher. His daughter's in college. And he's a new grandfather, so he's like.
This sounds like something that would make for a great commercial for Ancestry.
It would, except the wolves on my side of the family. If we were nice people and they were nice people, it'd be different. But we're not nice people.
Yeah, but instead, you know, no, I know the feeling. You know, we're barbarians.
Yeah, I mean, really, the Vikings on our side of the family just. You know, we just have never quite
bred it out of them, did they?
Never did. No, it's been the raping, pillaging, plundering side of
drinking, carrying on. Yes.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Is this the same side of the family that has West Virginia roots?
Yes.
We'll see.
Yes, the Haynes of West Virginia. Absolutely.
I will have you know that the previous owner of this property this property was purchased from someone named Haynes.
Get out of here.
Wouldn't lie to you.
H-A-N-E-S?
I'm not sure.
Well, you'll have to look.
I'll have to look at the deed, but there's another parcel immediately below us, and those two parcels and I think a couple of more here were all owned by and he was a physician of some sort. He was known as Doc.
Interesting. Well, my great-great-grandpappy in the late 1800s, right around the turn of the century, was actually one of the wealthiest men in West Virginia. I'm sure it was Nathan. And he, there was an article in the New York Times about where he had put an ad in the paper for a wife, and he ended up marrying a 26-year-old woman who came in on the train. He bought her a wedding dress. They got married. She was younger than some of his grandchildren. Yeah, all of that was
again not that unusual.
Yeah, my family does a good scandal. I'm telling you, these people, and they said we'd never be good at anything.
Well, I mean, you call it a scandal. We just call it Wednesday.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But it's pretty cool. It's a cool story. So I'll have to let you know how it ends. But yeah, we're all going out in July to meet. So pretty cool.
That's gonna be awesome. And now I do have to ask, because you know, you have since moved into Kansas City, but you have not left your rural confines behind entirely. With the storm and everything, how did they fare out to the Ballerina Swan Lake Trailer Park and Country Club?
Believe it or not, West Central Electric Cooperative buried all their lines after the last really bad ice storm 20 years ago. They never went without power.
Same thing for Hooterville?
The trailer tutors all kept their power, and it was the wrong colors in the city that I'm cavorting with.
Well, you know how it goes with that race mixing, Carol.
I know.
But that. So do you think maybe
my neighbor said hello yesterday and couldn't help myself. I said hello before I could stop me.
Oh, well, dadgummit. See, that's why. So maybe they'll put through a whopping rate increase and bury your lines too?
They'll be silly.
Yeah, I know. I can't help it.
It's not in my neighborhood. They might do it over in Johnson County, but they're not going to do it. They're not going to do it east of Truce. Let's put it that way.
Oh, Jesus. So how's business over to the workplace?
Business was really good up until this storm, and then the next half a foot that's going to go on top of it with the ice and the sub-zero temperatures, we're pretty much screwed for the next probably week.
Yeah, least. But after that, people will find out how fucked up their roofs are, and business will be good again, right?
Oh, I already know how fucked up some of the roofs are. Some of the roofs we did had trees go through them.
Ooh.
So we're going to have to go back.
I mean, it's not your fault that, I mean, no roof can take a tree.
No roof can take a tree. However, our warranty states that they have to let us fix it or it voids their warranty.
Ah.
So that's between them and their insurance company, but I'm guaranteed the job.
Well, you know, I like I said, I follow all this at afar. And uh-huh. the business you're associated with just looks like wonderful folks.
They are wonderful folks. They really are.
And every time I see this godforsaken bigot in the White House, mm-hmm. And then I see a story of some random act of decency that the folks you work for engage in,
mm-hmm. I know. It was like a year and a half ago when the little old lady, they were doing a roof for her, and right in the middle of us doing the roof, her husband, who had Lou Gehrig's disease, died. And I made the guys clean everything up and so that the coroner could get in and get the guy out of the house and all that. And she was so sad. And it was right after that, they were just finishing up her roof. And one of her daughters came by and mentioned that it was her mom's birthday. And, you know, those guys, one of them ran down to the store and ordered this beautiful bouquet of roses and had them sent to the house while they were still up on the roof.
Wow. That's...
I'm like, they didn't even speak
so much for not sending their best.
Yeah, they don't even speak the same language, but there were certain things that they understood, like grief and loneliness and sadness. And
so just out of curiosity, and I'm sure you're not just sitting there surveying them on every topic, but
no.
What did they evince any response? Because I think of all the things that have happened lately, you know, first there was the family separation, kidnapping, mm-hmm. concentration camp business, and then we got two actual dead children within 2 weeks of each other.
Yeah.
Did you get any kind of a response on that? I mean, because I was incensed.
Bob, there's such a profound sense of sadness about the whole thing that the guys don't even address it. You can't say the word Trump before pinche pendejo. I mean, you just hear them start swearing.
I think I even know a couple of those words there, and yeah, I don't speak Spanish.
They're not calling him Uncle Don. They just get so angry about it. But most of the guys that work for me come from the Huasteca region. They come from the village that Chente is from and from the surrounding villages. So most of them speak the same dialect. There are a few that are from like Matamoros and Intamapolis, just south of Brownsville, and a couple from other parts of Mexico, but most of them are all from the same region. I don't employ any Puerto Ricans, any Guatemalans, anybody from Honduras, Costa Rica. I don't have any. They're all Mexicans. So they're not feeling, you know, most of the people from that caravan are really from Central America.
Well, yeah, the little fella who died, you know, who caught the flu from an American in American captivity.
Yes.
And I'd never heard of the Chuj people. And I've tried to learn a little bit of the ethnography of the region, just because even though I'm never going to go there, doesn't mean that I don't care and that I'm not interested.
Exactly.
And he speaks a language that's spoken by, you know, 100,000 or so people. And it was a little guy's first language.
Yeah.
And Spanish was a distant second.
Mm-hmm.
And we are so geographically and ethnographically ignorant in this country that a guy like Trump can say Mexicans, and we think that refers to some monolithic people.
Well, it doesn't, because as you travel throughout Mexico, you'll learn that depending upon where they live and what the Indian infusion into their culture was, that they speak very different languages. The dialects are so vast. As you move from, you know, region to region, Jalisco is very different from San Luis Potosi. And it's just very, very different. They all tend to understand each other. They do have to ask back and forth what it is, but the Mexican Spanish that I speak is Huasteca, because that's what I'm learning from all of them. And it's all the Indian tribe that they're from and the region.
Now, roughly, where is that?
Huasteca region would be central, let's say about 3 hours north of Mexico City.
Okay.
More on the, more towards the eastern side. It's eastern central.
Okay, so north. Probably roughly north of Teotihuacan.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, and if you ever look up an Englishman by the name of Edward James, and it will talk about the Surrealist garden that he built in a little town called Gilitla, which is spelled with an X. So you look at it and you're like, I don't know how it's called Gilitla.
So that X is an H?
The X is actually an H.
I'll be damned, because there's a bunch of languages down there where the X is an SH.
I know. No, it's Gilitla.
Wow.
In that particular region it is.
Sure.
But, when you go there, I mean, I have a beautiful photograph of that someone took of me standing. There's a staircase that leads up above the forest canopy. And it literally leads to nowhere. You're just standing above the canopy. There are doors that lead that all of a sudden you'll be walking through the forest and there are doors there. And you open up the doors and it leads into another. Salvador Dali visited the Surrealist garden and said he would never set foot in Mexico again because it was better than anything he ever did.
Wow.
And that's 30 miles.
I freely admit it's supposedly one of the seven deadly sins. I freely admit I envy you that experience.
It is amazing. I've gone back twice. I mean, I've had three total trips to Mexico, like, in a year. And I'm going to go back this year because I love the people there. And I love that region, and I've been made to feel very much at home. And, you know, I walk down the street now, and people will call me by name, and I'm like, I have no idea who they are.
Well, all that means is you're part of the community.
Yeah, I am part of the community. And you see some of the most beautiful things there. I watched the oldest man in the village was 105 years old, and he died when I was there. And I was watching the funeral dirge as they were carrying his casket down the street. And it was so beautiful that it was like one of those things that you want to film and you get your camera almost up to your face and you can't do it because it just seems so disrespectful.
Yeah, it's like somehow or another, you're taking something that's very private and very real and rendering it into a spectacle.
Yeah. And that wasn't my intent at all, but I didn't want it to be misinterpreted. So, yeah, they're lovely people. And I'm almost certain that when I finally retire and have had enough, that's where I'm going.
I was going to ask you that because I can't imagine not wanting to do that.
I don't have any desire to stay in a country that would elect Donald Trump, or that would elect a Donald Trump. Because if they could do it once, they could do it again.
Well, yeah, that, and, well, let me ask you then, how are you feeling about, as I was saying earlier, nothing that we need to see changed is going to change between now and January 2021, and I'm not trying to bum people out.
No, it's true.
What do you make the odds of ditching him and getting the Senate and actually fixing the country?
Only 50-50 at this point, and that's being gracious and hopeful.
I got a breaking news alert from the New York Times while we were talking, Carol. The shutdown's economic impact may be double previous estimates, according to White House economists. They're not going to be White House economists for long, are they?
No, they're not.
But it could create a contraction in the economy.
Of course it's going to create a contraction in the economy. It already is. How can it not? How can it not? These people aren't getting their paychecks. They're not spending their paychecks. And it also means that small businesses aren't able to get loans. And it means that food stamps are being cut off and a lot of essential services. And, of course, you know, like the Food and Drug Administration is no longer inspecting meat and, you know, lettuce and things like that. So what could possibly fucking go wrong? So, you know.
Yeah, it's like I guess as a concession, last night when he was feeding the cold hamburgers to Clemson, there were a stack of prepackaged salads sitting on the table as well, Carol. And I was thinking, ain't one leaf of that lettuce been inspected?
Those were birders. Hamburgers.
Hamburgers. Jesus Christ.
Did you see that tweet?
Oh, yeah, I did. Yeah, yeah, hamburgers.
I saw it trending, and I was like, I don't even have to ask. I know exactly what it is.
And, you know, the fact that he capitalized fast food. You know, you and I, we're hateful little grammar Nazis, but capitalizing fast food.
I know.
Jesus.
Goes great with covfefe.
Well, it does. So let me end things the way I started things. Have you seen the picture of him with the bandage on the hand?
Who?
Trump.
No. What did I miss?
Well, let me see. I don't know how to. I'll get it here. I'll get it to you via Twitter. I don't have a date on it, but it's a picture of him talking outside to Sean Hannity. Sean's got it. You know, the life support system for a haircut, the Hannity job, has the microphone up to him. And he's and as he always does, Trump is playing his imaginary accordion, waving his arms back and forth.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But on the back of his right hand, there is a bandage with a blood spot on it. And it's just slightly not obscured by the cuff of his president and jacket.
I can't imagine. Unless they were, you know, I think they, syphilis victims who were pretty much near the end, don't they have to get, like, blood tests and stuff taken?
Who knows?
I mean, it makes sense.
I've been saying for weeks now that they can't get the dose right.
No.
Yesterday, when he thought he was going to Nashville, but he went to New Orleans instead, they sat on the runway there for an hour and didn't go anywhere.
Well, it's no different than the day he couldn't find his own limousine. He got off Air Force One and could not find
right.
The limousine.
And yes, and
that
of course
was in front of him.
And he was slurring yesterday. Now, this man says he doesn't drink. I mean, if you call this program and you're slurring, we'll know that you have violated the plea agreement, for instance. Which you never shall. But a guy who says he's never drank, and he's slurring words talking to the farmers in New Orleans.
I honestly thought he was having a mini stroke.
Well, I'm wondering.
It's what it reminded me of the first time I saw him do it.
And he's lost all control of his temper. He was screaming at Mick Mulvaney a couple of days ago.
Oh. And Mick has so many jobs at the White House.
Well, he does. He's working very hard. He's drawing two salaries. been a long time since I heard the Betty Rubble laugh. I can thank
Sorry.
You for that. That's okay. I live for that.
I've plumb run you out of time, Bob.
Well, that's all right. But Mick Mulvaney was trying to negotiate with Chuck and Nancy, crying Chuck, and Trump started screaming at him, "You fucked it up, Mick, you fucked it up." And yet there haven't been 150,000 articles about Trump using the word fuck.
I know. And have you noticed that I've started referring to him as Dmitry Trumpinskaya?
Oh, I think that's lovely. Hello, because it immediately took me to Dr. Strangelove. Hello? Yes, Dmitry. It's nice to talk. Of course I like to talk to you, Dmitry. Mm-hmm. Oh, God. Well, it has been lovely hearing from you. Don't be such a damn stranger. I'm glad your power's back on. I'm glad your pipes didn't explode.
Yeah, me too. Like I said, I ran home, turned on every heater in the house, so I'm trying to get the house back up to temperature, because it is bitter in there.
Maybe think about owning a kerosene heater?
Yeah.
I mean, it's some stinking stuff, but...
It is. But it still would have been enough to keep me in the house for that many days.
How many... Well, not to get too nosy, how many square feet?
I don't know how many square feet, but the house is long. And there's three bedrooms and a bathroom and the kitchen and the laundry room, and it's big enough.
Well, I mean, I only ask because, back here I have to use propane.
But it's 100 years old and...
Drafty as hell.
It's drafty as hell, so it's like the heat comes in, the heat sucked out.
Yeah, if you did an infrared photo, it would just be glowing and sort of pulsating, sure.
Yeah, pretty much. I'm sure they'd see me. I'd be the red thing on the inside.
It's like some sort of Kansas City Sims.
Something like that, actually. Yeah, well, I know. Weird, huh?
Well, listen, you take care of yourself and stay warm and stay in touch, will you?
I will, and I'm really sorry it's been so long. I promise I will call back in. I will call back in next week.
Okay, well, I mean, you've just... I know how damn busy you've been, so it's understandable.
But doing good things and getting stuff done.
I'm glad of it. Carol Baker, you take care of yourself, dear.
Thank you, Bob.
See you. Bye. The one and only Queen of the Minions, Carol Baker, re-electrified and trying to warm up in Kansas City. It's time for us to get out of here. Thanks very kindly to Charlene in Rhode Island for jumping in alongside John and alongside... Sorry, I don't have the list here in front of me. But Charlene jumped in, and James in Illinois jumped in, and John jumped in. So we are 35 bucks to the good from where we were. So that means we got it knocked down to $350 this evening. And so that means tomorrow's $550, unless it changes overnight, and I'll let folks know if that's the case. Again, thanks to everybody who keeps the program going. Thank you so much to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in this little ongoing experiment in conversation. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky. And thanks to Steve in the chat room. Thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.